Good morning and welcome, honourable members and our guests from the media and elsewhere, to what will hopefully be the last session for 2016. Members, the program for today is that at 9:05, 5 minutes late, we were going to hear testimony from Rachel Kalidas, a former board member, and thereafter very briefly decide on the way forward for the committee in terms of what happens from today until we reconvene in January. Around about the 10th of January. So we'll have that session quickly with members. Assign tasks to everybody to work on Christmas Day and then come back. So that is the program. It shouldn't be a long program today if we follow the program as per scheduled. So at this point, let's welcome you, Ms. Kalidas, and thank you very much for making yourself available to share with this committee that the committee requires so that we are able to do our job. But before we do that, Ms. Kalidas, please be informed that by law you are required to answer fully and satisfactorily all the questions lawfully put to you, or to produce any document that you are required to produce in connection with the subject matter of the inquiry, notwithstanding the fact that the answer or the document could incriminate you or expose you to criminal or civil proceedings or damages. You are, however, protected in that evidence given under oath or affirmation before a house or committee may not be used against you in any court or place outside Parliament, except in criminal proceedings concerning a charge of perjury or a charge relating to the evidence or documents required in these proceedings. I have been informed, ma'am, that you will take the oath. Is that correct?
Good morning, Honourable Chair. Yes, I will take the oath.
So if you could repeat after me. I swear by Almighty God.
I swear by Almighty God.
That the evidence I shall give.
That the evidence I shall give.
Will be the truth.
Will be the truth.
The whole truth.
The whole truth.
And nothing but the truth.
And nothing but the truth.
Please raise your right hand and say, so help me God.
So help me God.
Thank you very much. Honourable Vanara, it's just before 9:15, can you wrap up your business by 10 and then we'll open up to members. Honourable Killian will be the first and we'll go this way and we'll see where it goes. We will revert to our 5 minutes per member. We'll revert to 5 minutes per member. Members are going to arrive. I have total faith that members will arrive. So by the time it gets to you, Honourable Swart, members would have taken the opportunity. So it's going to be 5 minutes per member. We'll start with you, Killian. Get to Chauke, Mem Van Dam, go all the way up and then come and end with hopefully Mokwena when he has arrived, if he does, by the time we get to him. Having said that, sir, over to you until 10 o'clock.
Thank you, Chair. And good morning to yourself and the honourable members. Ms. Kalidas, good morning.
Good morning, Advocate Vanara, to the honourable chairperson and honourable members of this committee.
Can you, for the record, just state your full particulars and give the committee a glimpse of your academic qualifications and background?
Thank you. My name is Rachel Kellida. I was appointed as a non-executive director to the SABC board on the 25th of September 2013 until my unlawful removal on the 12th of March 2015. I'm a chartered accountant by profession, registered with SAICA as well as IRBA. I manage my own practice, which focuses on public sector governance, advisory services of internal audit risk management. I chair a number of audit committees, boards across provincial and national government.
You have given this committee a statement, which is a 19-paged statement, is that correct?
That is correct, Advocate.
And are you comfortable that that statement be shared with the members of the committee?
Yes, I do.
And that that statement be part and parcel of the proceedings of this committee?
I confirm so.
Let us just give the committee an account of what happened, of how the board dealt with the public protector's report.
Thank you, Advocates. If you'd allow me just to read from my statement. Despite being a board member in office at the end of September 2013, I only had sight of the public protector's report on the 18th of February 2014 when it was publicly released and made accessible on the website of the public protector. I also took the liberty of circulating the report to other board members as well as the company secretary, since we had not been furnished with this report prior to its public release. As alluded to by the public protector on page 10 of her report, when governance and ethics fails, the SABC board response to the provisional report was prepared by the board chairperson, Mrs. Ellen Shabalala, and her lawyers, to the exclusion of board members. This was unfortunately not an isolated incident and contributed to the dysfunctionality of the board. On the 24th of February 2014, the board met and deliberated on the report. The following is an extract from the board resolutions of that discussion, and I quote, Ms. R. Kalidis' dissent with regard to the manner and process followed in respect of the manner proposed to deal with the public protector's report be and is hereby noted. The chairs of the Audit, Governance and Nominations, Human Resources and Remuneration, and Social and Ethics Committee be and are hereby tasked to analyze the details included in the reports of the public protector. A consolidated report on the outcome of the analysis of the details included in the reports of the public protector, together with a recommendation on the actions to be taken, must be submitted to the board within 2 weeks. A special board meeting must be convened to allow the board to deliberate the submissions prior to submitting its proposal to the minister. At a board meeting held on the 31st of July 2014, the following resolution was taken regarding the consolidation of the response to the public protector's report. The recommendation of the Committee of Chairs in respect of the proposed response to the public protector's report be and is hereby noted. Mrs. K.T. Bonakele, K. Naidu, and Ms. R. Kalidis dissent on the decision to conclude the SABC's response to the public protector's report be and are hereby noted. Ms. T.V. Caldenes, in her capacity as company secretary, be and is hereby mandated to effect the changes proposed by members to the draft response to the public protector's report and to circulate the updated document to members prior to it being submitted to the public protector and the minister. Despite this board-approved process, a legal advisory report prepared by Mkunu attorneys dated 5th of June 2014 was distributed during and following the special in-committee board of the 9th of June 2014. I later learned that the Mkunu report was also submitted to the Office of the Public Protector as well as to the Honourable Minister Mutambi, purportedly on behalf of the board, clearing Mr. Motseneng of any wrongdoing. This made the board approved process obsolete.
Let's just zoom into the Mkunu report you're referring to. did the board take a decision mandating any official, be the chairperson, be the executives, to engage the services of Mthunu attorneys?
No, Honourable Advocate. There was no board resolution and no mandate from the board in its collective to appoint Mthunu attorneys. Our understanding was that the chairperson had appointed them, and they were presented to the board at one point in time as being advisors to the office of the chair and then the board. But it was not a board-mandated process.
Now, you say this report gets to be circulated at the meeting of the 9th of June. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Why is it circulated at the meeting?
The manner in which it was introduced to the board was that these attorneys were engaged to provide a legal opinion to the board, and that report was supposed to have been a supplementary document to assist the board as well as the committees that were tasked to prepare their report. So our understanding was that it was initially supposed to be a resource to the board, but ultimately the board would take accountability in the compilation of the public protector's report. Unfortunately, with the sequence of events that later transpired, it was not so.
Now, this report gets to be circulated at the meeting. What is the status? Is it for noting, or are you expected to discuss this report?
It was presented to the board as a flyer, so members would have not had a chance to engage with the report prior to the meeting. As it was introduced as a legal opinion to be able to assist the board, so it was in a sense for noting, but also as an advisory document that the board can take into account, like it takes into account various other documents in formulating a response.
Now, you say there was a resolution by the board on how to deal with the public protector's report. And you mentioned, I think you are reading from an extract of the minutes, where yourself, Mr. Mavuso, and Mr. Naidu noted your objections to it. What is it that you are objecting to?
I dissented twice. The first time I dissented was in regard to the process that was followed. My personal opinion was that the board did not have a mandate in terms of legislation to review the public protector's report for validity. The public protector's report, in my opinion, had to be accepted in its entirety, or if the board members felt that they would want to refute any of the allegations or recommendations, the process to follow would have been to take it upon review. The way the board approached it was that they, especially being guided by the chairperson, was that they did not agree with the contents of the public protector's report in terms of the observation and recommendations made. The process of appointing each of the committees to look at the report was in essence a manner of trying to validate the observations that the public protector made. So I think it's completely beyond the scope of the board to re-audit the public protector's report, so to speak.
The minister was here yesterday testifying, and one of the issues she testified upon was the public protector's report. And her testimony was to the effect that she had told the board to implement the public protector's report. What is your response to that?
I think in the broad sense of it, there was a pronouncement that the board needed to act upon the public protector's report. But I think the manner in which that was done was incorrect. For example, at a meeting held on the 12th of July, whereby the minister met with the board for the first time, there were comments that were made to the effect that she had already received the Mthunu report, despite it not having been sanctioned by the board. There was also, if you can allow me just to get to that, whereby a quote was made that the Mthunu report should be implemented, and then there was also a comment made that at the board meeting of the 7th of July, whereby the public protector, one of the recommendations made was that a permanent COO should be appointed within 90 days. I think if anybody has to read that, it would mean that a COO needs to be appointed following due processes, as well as ensuring that there is, an appointment process whereby it takes into account the observations made by the public protector. But that was quoted out of context to say that then the COO must be appointed because the PP says that the COO must be appointed within 90 days, which resulted in the sense of urgency of the appointment.
Before we get to the appointment of the COO, we're still on the public protector's report. Your shareholder, with whom the board has got a shareholder's compact, gives an instruction to the board to implement the public protector's report. What you're telling us is that report, we all know, was not implemented. What the objective facts point out to is there was a Mtunu report. And you say this Mtunu's report, which was sourced without the board's knowledge and approval, which flew into one of your meetings for noting, was presented to the minister. Is that correct?
That's correct. If I can quote from an extract of the meeting of the 2nd of July held at the Mount Grace Hotel in Macalisburg between the board and the Honourable Minister. In addressing the board, as is reflected in the minutes of that day's proceedings, the Honourable Minister stated that she had considered the legal report of Mkunu Attorneys Incorporated and had subjected it to a further legal opinion. Consequently, she recommended that the board must take action on the basis of the legal report she had received.
Now, the minister first gives instructions to the board to implement the public protector's report. And there is then this document that has got no status that gets to be sent to the minister. Why was it firstly sent to the minister? And secondly, in your view, was there any basis for the minister to entertain this Mtunu's report?
In my personal opinion, I think the process of the minister receiving the Mkunu report was invalid, as it had not been presented at the board. There was no board resolution to the effect that the board had sanctioned this report to the minister, so it was an undue process that was followed in terms of her receiving the Mkunu report firstly. And I think secondly, the Mkunu report in essence tried to refute the claims made by the public protector, which I deem to be unlawful given the status, of the legislation in this regard.
When this Mtunu's report is sent to the minister, one would expect that it would not have flown solo to the minister's office, that it would have been accompanied by the minutes of the meeting at which this document found itself. In this case, what is it that was submitted to the minister together with this Mtunu's report?
Personally, I had not had sight of the documents that the minister would have in her possession. Based on the comments that she made, she indicated that she received the legal opinion from the attorneys. Under normal circumstances, in my other experience, one would expect that to be accompanied by a covering letter from the SABC board chairperson, which would have an extract of the board resolution. As I had not had sight of that, one would have expected the company secretary, and one would have reasonably expected the board chairperson to have fulfilled that compliance process in respect of the submission to the Honourable Minister.
So what are you telling the committee is that initially the minister was clear, she gave a clear instruction to the board to implement the public protector's report.
Yes.
That she was furnished with a document, we're not clear around the circumstances. And then she obtained her legal opinion, and she changed her attitude towards her initial stance. Is that what you're telling the committee?
Yes, Chair. And I think the minister also says that she subjected it to a further legal opinion before she pronounced that she recommended to the board that action must be taken on the basis of the legal report she had received. So one got the sense that she had confidence that the Mkunu report was the way to go.
You're reading from the minutes of an extract from the minutes of a meeting, is that
yes,
correct?
Yes, this is an extract of the resolution of the board meeting held with the minister on the 2nd of July 2014, and these minutes were subsequently confirmed by the board as being a true reflection of those proceedings.
My understanding is that this issue of the public protector divided the board, members of the board. Is that correct?
That is absolutely correct.
Now, those who were for the implementation of the report must have been excited when even the minister was giving instructions for its implementation. Would that be correct?
Yes, definitely.
Now, you're in a meeting where the minister is changing her stance. Now, those who were for the implementation of this resolution ordinarily would be disappointed with that stance. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
Do you then raise this issue with the minister at that meeting where you just extracted the minutes of it?
I was not specifically present at that meeting of the 2nd of July, so I'm recounting now the resolutions and the minutes of that day's proceedings. There was a subsequent meeting with the minister on the 7th of July, the day upon which the board decided to appoint Mr. Motsoeneng. When the minister joined us at the conclusion of the board meeting, which was around 11 p.m., the chairperson at the time, Mrs. Ellen Shabalala, did advise the minister of the resolution of the board, and she also advised the minister that there were members who were not comfortable and did not approve of that appointment.
At Magaliesberg, your first meeting with the minister, there's evidence that is before the committee that the minister urged board members to fill the vacancy of the COO. Is that correct?
That is correct. If I could just maybe read from the extract of the minutes of the 2nd of July. The Honourable Minister pointed out that if a person had been acting for such a long period without any problems and without any action being taken by the corporation, in law, a legitimate expectation had been created that the individual would be appointed in the position, and this left the board in an untenable situation.
Now, the minutes quote the minister to be referring to someone who's been acting for long in this position, having been created a legitimate expectation. To whom was the minister referring to?
It was the then acting CEO, Mr. Shlaudi Motsoeneng.
Was he an acting CEO or acting COO?
Acting COO.
Okay. Then there's a meeting that is convened, a special board meeting convened on an urgent basis. Did you get an invite for that meeting?
The invite was circulated per SMS at 6:42 p.m. on the 6th of July by the company secretary, Mrs. Teresa Caldenhays, which, if I could quote, says, "Dear all, an urgent board meeting is requested for 1900 hours on the 7th of July 2014 to be held in the 28th floor boardroom to discuss the public protector's report and the COO. It is expected that the minister will be in attendance. Kindly confirm your availability. Agenda will be submitted under a separate cover. Regards, Teresa." At about 4 p.m. the following day, we received an agenda which stated that there were two items for discussion, namely the public protector's report, and it just said COO matter.
So, from the time that you received the email until you got the second communication. Understanding is you in one day got an email inviting you to a meeting.
Was it
an email or SMS?
The day prior at about 6:42 p.m. on the 6th, we received an SMS text message, and I still have that on my phone if members would like to have a look at that. And then on the following day, the day of the meeting, at about 4 p.m., we received an email with an agenda attached, as well as notice of the meeting. There were no supporting documents in relation to these two items for discussion. That was at about 4 p.m. And at 6 p.m., the meeting officially commenced.
The point I'm making is from, I don't know when and who conceived this idea of this meeting. It's still a mystery to this committee. But we know, I mean, Ms. Shabalala called the meeting. The circumstances surrounding her calling that special meeting is still a mystery. We hope she will clarify that to the committee. But there is almost 24-hour turnaround from the time that you get the SMS to the time you receive an email. And there are only two matters on the agenda. Why was it difficult to have proper documentation prepared for this meeting?
You know, Chair, it's very unfortunate. I wish the company secretary would be able to provide that information. I think that good governance dictates that when a meeting is called, there should be adequate supporting documentation to enable board members to prepare sufficiently and to make informed decisions. Mm-hmm. It's very unfortunate that we had a situation whereby both the company secretary as well as the board chairperson did not fulfill those governance responsibilities to the board.
The notice, when you receive the notice, could you comprehend what you were called to attend to at that meeting?
Not at all. Because the PP report was under discussion at that point in time, we assumed that there would just be a discussion of processes that were already underway. We were quite surprised when it said that the minister will be in attendance, because the minister had met the board a week prior on the 2nd of July. So we thought that perhaps there could be something urgent, and given the respect that we have for the office of the minister, we made ourselves available at a very short period in time. But when it said COO matter, under no circumstances did we anticipate that we would be arriving to make an appointment on that day.
You get to this special board meeting. You, together with your colleagues, are non-executives.
That's correct.
You surely have other businesses to earn your living, is it correct?
Absolutely.
You get to a meeting, does anybody explain the urgency of this meeting?
Upon opening the meeting, the chairperson, Mrs. Ellen Shabalala, indicated that the urgency around this meeting was that she received a lawyer's letter from the attorneys of the acting COO, Mr. Mutswaneng, which basically motivated that he was acting for a very long period in time, but also that what preceded this was that there was also a clearing of the issue of the previous CEO, Mr. Mbuso Mbebe, whereby there was legal action that was instituted against the SABC by the former CEO, and that had now been subsequently resolved by the Honourable Minister.
Now, I get that there was a correspondence. Why couldn't that correspondence have been dealt with at a subsequent board, scheduled subsequent board meeting?
We would also like to know that, you know, in my opinion, in hindsight, I don't think there was an urgency for that meeting, and there definitely was not an urgency for that appointment to be made that night.
Did you raise that
concern
with the board?
It was a very, fiercely contested meeting whereby we had two groups at the end of the day which tried to advance their motivations, their arguments and their opinions in this regard, especially in light of having the public protector's report before us, which had not yet been adequately responded to. We felt that it was the inappropriate time. There's also board members who specifically wanted a legal opinion because they felt that this decision that was being advanced by the board was unlawful.
You say there was an invite extended to the minister, and the minister is on record confirming or acknowledging receipt thereof. Was the minister at the meeting or at the venue of the meeting?
Yes, when the meeting commenced at around 7 p.m., shortly afterwards, the chairperson excused herself, saying that she needed to go welcome the minister. When she returned to the board, she indicated that the minister was sitting, I think, in her office. So our understanding was that the minister was present while the board was proceeding with its discussions. When the board had concluded the voting process and a decision was made, the Honourable Minister was invited into the boardroom whereby this decision was announced and communicated to her. So she was present in the building at the time.
This decision, which is a recommendation to the Minister, gets to be communicated. What is the Minister's response to the board members?
The minister responded that she was there to hear the outcome of the decision and that she would apply her mind to this decision. The next day, we received a written letter from the minister which stated that she had received a letter from the board making a recommendation for the appointment, and she was confirming the appointment of Mr. Motsoeneng as the CEO.
Was the minister furnished with the minutes of that meeting? Would you know?
I wouldn't know. I actually did specifically ask the company secretary the day after. I wanted to ensure that the letter to the minister specifically articulated my dissent. The company secretary responded to me on an email saying that she's not sure, she wasn't involved in the process of compiling the letter to the minister. The process was handled outside of the office of the company secretary.
Did you not find it odd that the circumstances surrounding, firstly, the convening of this meeting, its urgency, you're not happy with? The minister in her busy schedule attending to quite a number of entities within her portfolio, that she would come and babysit the board that evening. And once the board had finished its business, to come and speak to members of the board. I just want you to repeat what she said to board members about this particular issue.
If you'd allow me a minute, just maybe quote from the minutes.
Okay. Yes, thank you.
Is an extract from the minutes of the 7th of July, item number 2.4, feedback to the Honourable Minister. The chairperson pointed out that a period of acting had not been the only issue considered in arriving at the decision of confirming the acting CEO, but mainly on its merits, the new developments on the issue of Mr. Mvuso Mbebe as confirmed by the DOC and the Minister's requirement to adhere to the recommendations of the Public Protector's report. The Honourable Minister pointed out that, in her understanding, she had been invited to the meeting to be advised of the resolutions of the Board with regard to the matters on the agenda. The Minister informed members that Mr. Thibo Nakiela had tendered his resignation. And then later on, the Minister requested the Board to communicate in writing its resolution on the manner of the COO in order for her to apply her mind in this regard. She undertook to make the matter a priority as her 90-day deadline to implement the recommendation of the public protector had passed, and she would not want to appear as being defiant of the public protector. The resolution in this regard was that the board communicates in writing to the Minister of the Department of Communications its resolution to recommend confirming Mr. G.H. Motseneng as the Chief Operations Officer of the SABC.
I'm a bit confused. I'm confused because the Minister's initial stance was for the board to implement the Public Protector's report. Subsequent to that, the Minister had changed her stance in respect of the implementation of that report because she had sourced and obtained legal advice on what the Mthunu's report was saying. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Now, if the Minister says to a meeting that you are implementing the Public Protector's report, which part of that report were you implementing?
My understanding was there was a specific reference made to the recommendation by the Public Protector that a permanent COO should be appointed within 90 days. It seems like that was extracted above all the other recommendations as having a sense of urgency.
As an approval authority, the Minister in this regard, my understanding is that at that meeting, there was no compliance with HR recruitment policies. Is that correct?
That is correct.
We now know that even your company secretary, who wanted to raise that point at the meeting, was shut down. Don't tell us what the policies say. That was her testimony before this committee. She might not have said it at the meeting because she was shut down.
I would beg to differ. You know, I think that at the meeting, despite it being, a very heated debate and discussion, you know, as is in normally any meeting, that a board member or an official who would like to speak has an opportunity to raise their hand or to gesture as such to the chairperson of the meeting, and then members would be allowed to make input. So I find it, concerning. If I look at the minutes as well, we all had a chance to voice our opinion. So I, based on my recollection of the day and the minutes, I don't think that that was the case.
But she didn't even have to tell you as the board, because you were the board member, you would have approved those policies, is that correct?
Absolutely.
So you knew that those policies were not being complied with.
Yes, the board in its entirety would have known, because prior to that we were furnished with the policies. The MOI, which was in effect at that point in time, also stipulated what the process would have been to appoint your executive directors. There's also reference, to that being that comment, which was highlighted to the board as its collective by various members who were opposed to the decision, that there would be a normal process. The HR committee chairperson at the time, Prof. Komalo, did specifically advance that argument. He was supported by a number of us, but it was unfortunately not accepted by the majority of board members.
Now, the minister seems to have had a particular interest on this particular process. Would you say that she would have known that no processes as outlined in your recruitment policies were complied with?
I would think so. Given that the Public Protector report was still in front of all of us at that point in time, as well as when she, when she joined the meeting, there was a summary provided to the minister of the process that was followed by the board earlier on. So I would definitely say that the minister would be aware that there was no compliance to those processes followed. I also specifically requested the company secretary to ensure that it's documented in the letter that was sent to the minister, which unfortunately did not happen. But the minister, when the resolution was read to her, it was brought to attention that there were a number of board members who did not accept and support this decision.
Mr. Madota Shushu testified before this committee around irregularities around the procurement processes at the SABC. And the minister was before the committee yesterday and indicated that Mr. Shushu should have reported this matter to the police, as it was a crime, and that by his failure to report such, he became an accomplice to the commission of a crime. This is what I wanted to ask you. Consider this statement coming from the minister in light of the high rate of criminal activity within society in general, but within government departments or state institutions in general. Considering that Mr. Shushu, on learning about these irregularities, reported this matter to the Auditor General, reported this matter to Treasury, would the minister's statement be a responsible statement under those circumstances?
In my personal and professional opinion, I would not agree. I think that, you know, the Auditor General, especially if this matter is brought to them, they would ensure that it is followed through in terms of their auditing processes. But if one looks at the processes that the AG follows, they on a regular basis also would meet with the executive authorities of the relevant departments, as well as the entities under which those fall. So the AG does have an opportunity at the highest level to engage with the Honourable Minister and to be able to bring such matters to her attention. I think this is a normal process that the AG follows, whereby they meet in committee, but they also then have a chance to meet with the Minister and the department as the shareholder.
What you term your unlawful removal, unfortunately, we're not going to deal with that. But there was a recommendation from the board to the minister to remove you from the office. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Now, the minister claims to have acted in terms of the company's law. Whether that was right or wrong is neither here nor there for purpose of this exercise. But don't you find it odd that the same minister was still within this portfolio? There has been quite a number of resignations at this particular board, that she does not find the authority in the Companies Act to appoint other directors to fill the vacancy.
Absolutely. I think, you know, the manner in which one is appointed, there's a similar manner followed in terms of the removal and resignations. If there was a justification in the Companies Act to remove, there should have been a justification in the Companies Act to appoint. The fact that we are sitting now with only one non-executive board member and those vacancies have not been filled bears testament to the fact that it's only through the process of the Broadcasting Act that members can be appointed and removed.
The minister was here yesterday indicating that none of you, members of the board, raised what your colleagues have told before this committee as a divided board, the bullying of the board by Mr. Mutswane. Have you ever in any meeting raised with the minister any concerns you had around the board issues or the governance of the board?
The Honourable Minister did at a point in time call for one-on-one meetings with all of the non-executive board members. Unfortunately, my meeting was cancelled at very short notice. When it was subsequently scheduled, I received an SMS from our office at about 9:15 requesting me to present myself at about 2:00. Being a non-executive member and having various business interests, I was unable to, you know, to be there at such short notice, and accordingly, I did not have my one-on-one with the minister. But I would think that, given, you know, the extensive media coverage subsequent to the CEO appointment process, there was an indication in the media that there was a division in the board. There was also an indication of the board voting. So one would think that even though I did not have an opportunity personally to raise that with the minister, that there was sufficient public information available that there was a breakdown in the board in terms of this decision. But further to that, my colleagues had had an opportunity to meet with the minister, and I was told that this was raised through their various engagements with the minister.
You might not be aware, but the minister was here yesterday, and she testified that the process of removing board members of this board is cumbersome, and that there has to be something done about that. It does not end there. The minister has introduced a bill in the assembly, the Broadcasting Amendment Bill. And one of the purposes of the bill is to take away the role and the powers of the Assembly of Parliament to play a role in the recruitment and the appointment of board members. Even your personal experience, if Parliament were to approve that recommendation, what would it practically mean for board members at the SABC?
In my personal opinion, I think that could result in a huge amount of manipulation, whereby, you know, if going forward, if a shareholder does not agree with the perspective of board members, then they can be very easily removed to be out of the way. You know, I would hope that that bill does not result in legislation being passed. I think given that the SABC is a public broadcaster, by design of the current Broadcasting Act, I think the processes are deliberately cumbersome because it ensures protection of the public as well. So if that is removed, one then wonders if it is in the best interest of being a public broadcaster.
The last question from myself, ma'am, relates, if you can just introduce it, I'm sure members of this committee are itching to hear you talk about the multi-choice contract.
Thank you, Advocate. The multi-choice contract, as has been indicated earlier, was appointed at the time of the interim board. But upon our appointment, we were aware of that due to the extensive media coverage on that matter. At a board meeting held on the 15th of October, which was shortly after our appointment, we were presented with numerous documents for the board's information, which included, amongst others, the commercial and master channel distribution agreement between the SABC and MultiChoice, as well as the board minutes of the 12th of June, whereby this proposal was conditionally approved by the then interim board. At a subsequent board meeting of the 29th of October 2013, my fellow board member Krish Naidu raised his concerns regarding the legal aspects of the contract between the SABC and MultiChoice. He referred the board members to Section 8, read with Section 2 of the Broadcasting Act 4 of 1999, which related to the powers, objectives and parameters within which the SABC could operate. Based on these sections, Mr. Naidu was of the opinion that the MultiChoice contract was ultra vires the Broadcasting Act and invalid. He detailed various concerns, which amongst others was that it was anti-competitive and in contravention of Section 2 of the Broadcasting Act.
No further questions, sir.
Thanks, Advocate. Ma'am, just so that we have some sort of context, when you served on the board, did you chair any board subcommittee? And if you did, which one did you chair?
No, I did not have the privilege of chairing any of the subcommittees. I was just a member.
Of which subcommittee were you a member?
I was a member of the Audit Committee, of the Human Resources and Remuneration Committee, as well as the Acquisitions and Disposals Committee.
Could you briefly indicate to us the process? So I would assume it comes from the technical staff or the officials, whatever it might be, gets to the board subcommittee, gets to the board as a board decision. Is that the process that is normally followed?
Yes, under normal circumstances, matters that are in the jurisdiction of each of the committees would first serve at the board subcommittee. The board subcommittee would then make a recommendation to the board of such documentation or information.
In your time as a member of the audit committee, that cluster you spoke about, can you recall any issue or topic that subsequently went to the board that was of such a sensitive nature that the SABC has refused to give those documents to Parliament? Any matter that you think in your time in the audit subcommittee or HR subcommittee that was of such a serious nature that Parliament could be told that we can't give it to you because it will never negatively impact our commercial standing. Can you think of anyone? And if you can, just give us an indication of what kind of matters are of such importance that members of Parliament should not have sight of them?
Absolutely not, Chair. I think it's very important to note that the SABC is audited under the Public Finance Management Act, and as such, the information would be in public interest. The SABC also accounts to Parliament through the Portfolio Committee. So information that would be shared with the Audit Committee, in my opinion, is also suitable for tabling at the at Parliament, as well as the various structures of Parliament.
Thank you, Abonga, ma'am. Killian, your 5 minutes starts now.
Can we not have 10 minutes on this session, please? 5 minutes, okay. Chair, okay, can we negotiate for 7?
Honourable, you're wanting me to change midstream. I thought we had agreed that it was 5 minutes. But if you want 10 minutes, if you want the whole day, it's really up to you. There's a request for 10 minutes. There's...
We've all board members that appeared at 5, we actually had 5 minutes. I think let's stick to the 5. Let's use our way of inquiring as you had advised, and then we can do it. So no prefaces.
Any other views in terms of time? 5? 5. Approved. You've got 5 minutes, ma'am.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Chairperson, first of all, just a welcome to Ms. Kalidas, but I would like to ask her primarily on 2 issues. The one is the minutes where the appointment of the acting COO happened. What is of a concern to me is we were issued with purported minutes of the meeting of the 7th July, but the extract that you have provided here on page 6 does not appear in our submission from the company secretary. Our document looks different, and I think we need to just compare notes. It would therefore be very important if you could help us with other minutes so that we can compare documents submitted via the office of the company secretary. Then the issue of the appointment. If I look at the chronological order of events, it builds up from the first meeting, which you say you did not attend, that's Magalies, and that was the strategic session of the HR committee. Then the urgent meeting called on the 6th. From there, there was a meeting Yeah, and that meeting resolved that it was a very important matter, according to your minutes that you have given us an extract, that there should be an action within 2 weeks on the public protectors. The board should have a special meeting. Can you confirm that no such special meeting was called?
Thank you, Honourable Killen. In terms of the first issue, the minutes, I just want to state that the minutes that I have provided as supporting documentation to my witness are copies made out of the bundles that were provided to board members. Those bundles are still intact, as were served to board members. So I'm happy to make all of those available to yourselves. Secondly, in terms of the appointment of the CEO and sequence of events, the 2 weeks time frame was obviously not adhered to given the sequence of events. There were special meetings called at various points in time, and I can give you the dates and times of those minutes, but definitely not a specific meeting within 2 weeks to conclude on the PP process.
Would you say that given the meeting of the 2nd of July and the 7th of July, that there was a possibility that the minister exerted undue pressure on the board to make the appointment? Can you tell us, Mr. Motsoeneng's lawyers, who presented the letter at the meeting of the 7th of July, which company represented him?
Thank you, Honourable Member. I say this with all respect and humility to the office of the Honourable Minister. In my personal opinion, I would think that the board was misguided in terms of the comments that were made, as is documented in the minutes of the 2nd of July. I also would think that there was, as you would indicate, undue pressure placed upon the board. At that board meeting of the 7th of July, we were specifically told by the chairperson that the meeting will not conclude until the board reaches a decision, as the minister was waiting for a decision. And that is why we were sitting there at 11 p.m. at night, and we eventually ended up with a voting process. So we were basically not allowed to leave until a decision was made, which I would gather as being undue influence and pressure being placed upon us.
Okay, can I just proceed to the next item, and that is the memorandum of incorporation. Did the board ever discuss the memorandum of incorporation? And was it adopted at any board meeting? We have a copy of a document, and it is very interesting. The meeting of the 27th of November, there was an email that you are referring to. You then followed up to inquire why you as a board were not informed about the senior appointments. You were then told by the company secretary that the memorandum of incorporation was changed and it was signed. Did the board ever discuss those changes? And is it significant that we have a copy signed by the minister on the 30th of October, and then we have another one that was signed, or there's a stamp of Professor Maguve also in addition to the minister's signature? But can you tell us, did the board ever engage on the memorandum of incorporation?
No, during my period in office, we were not served with this revised MOI. The first time that I found out about it, as well as other members, was in passing when we were notified of executive appointments being made. We were just notified that the minister had revised the MOI and that there was a section which now removed powers that the board previously had to the group executives. Up until today, I've requested that MOI from the company secretary, and I have not received it. So in terms of the signatures, I have not been able to verify that.
Thank you very much. To our fellow South Africans guests in the gallery, you're welcome. You're witnessing an ad hoc committee in progress. And we are hoping that you will learn something from it. We're certainly grateful that you are showing some sort of interest in the workings of Parliament. So please be welcome. Honourable Chauke, your 5 minutes starts now, sir.
Thank you very much, Chair, and good morning, ma'am. When the Nkuno attorneys were introduced as the advisor to the Chair, what was the response of the board? Because I'll take it that that appointment will have obviously come through a resolution of the board, either in the form of a capacity to the chair of the board, to have legal support. What was the response of the board when that happened?
Honourable Choke, I think we must, bear in mind as well that there were points in time where our chairperson unfortunately behaved as an executive chairperson. The board did not take a resolution to appoint Mkunu attorneys. We were just notified that they had been appointed and that they would be providing a legal opinion and advisory services in this regard. There's no board resolution to that effect, and as board members, we were surprised.
The second point, obviously, is the issue of the remedial action of the public protector. Before they were referred to subcommittees, was there a discussion in the board, just zooming into what were the remedial actions before they were referred to the subcommittees?
No, during the first meeting whereby the public protector's report was tabled, the discussion was merely around the process. And it is for that specific reason that I dissented, because I felt that the recommendations were of such a substantial nature that they would have warranted a discussion at the board. And the board merely received the report and agreed on the process whereby it would be allocated to these various subcommittees.
In the meeting that dealt with the public protector's report, the company secretary in her presentation in this committee here, she told the committee that she has in fact advised the board accordingly on the process that must be followed with regard to these issues, especially the second one being the issue of the appointment of the COO. Was there such recorded in any of the minutes that the company secretary made that advice?
No, Chair, not at all.
As member of the subcommittee dealing with the audit issues, at some point did you have a discussion with the AG, especially the high-level discussion before the report is presented of the AG? If so, did you deal with issues of fruitless and wasteful expenditure in that engagement, and what was the position that the subcommittee took to process issues of fruitless and wasteful expenditure to an extent that you then report to the board, because the subcommittee will then recommend to the board of the process that must be followed?
Our main concern at that point in time as the audit committee was to ensure that there was accountability and that people were held responsible in relation to fruitless and wasteful as well as irregular expenditure. The process that we prescribed to management was that the audit committee should be provided with a detailed analysis of this as well as accountability allocated for each of these transactions.
Now, it's clear that the board was already now divided, as you report. Tell me how many members had a dissenting view, and can you name those members for the benefit of this committee?
Yes, if you just allow me a minute to get to the minutes. Sorry.
As you do that,
I have it.
You are really killing me.
Sorry.
The chair is going to kill me, please. Can you respond quickly so that I give you the last question?
Okay, thank you. The chairman confirmed that she was in support of the motion to confirm Mr. Motseneng in the position of the COO. She noted that the majority of members, namely Prof. Maguve, Ms. Mshlakaza, Ms. Kumalo, Ms. Zinde, Mr. Chatsumba and her, were in support of the motion to confirm Mr. Motseneng in the position of the COO, and parallel to that the legal opinions would be addressed. However, Ms. Kalidas, Mr. Lobisi and Mr. Naidu were of the view that a normal process of advertising had to be followed in this instance. Prof. Kumalo and Mr. Mavuso abstained, and I have the reasons here that are available in the minutes. Yes, it's the minutes of the 7th of July 2014 on page 7.
Thank you very much. My time is gone. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Chauke. Ma'am Fada.
Thank you, Ms. Kalidas. So I think over the last week we've heard testimony from different witnesses who described deep set rot and the complete collapse of good governance at the SABC. What I'm not 100% clear about is the role of the Minister of Communications. Do you think she unduly interfered in the SABC and failed to discharge of her duties of oversight?
Thank you, Honourable Van Damme. I think, again, with the graces, humility and respect, I must concede that, unfortunately, the board was misguided and there was undue influence placed in relation to those governance failures mentioned above.
So the minister did interfere and she failed to discharge her, of her duties.
Yes.
You're quite clear about that. And then the other question I have, yesterday the minister was asked about the late Hope Zinde's allegation that she said Ubaba loves Claudia and we must protect him. Did you ever have a conversation with Ms. Zinde about that? Did she ever relay that message to you? And did you ever get the sense that Mr. Motsoeneng was receiving political protection?
No, unfortunately she did not have that conversation with me. The first time I had sight of that was through the media when this communication was published between the minister and Hope Zinde.
Did you get the sense that Mr. Motsoeneng had political protection?
I had the sense that he had protection. I couldn't identify exactly where that protection came from, but within the board, he definitely had the support and protection of the chairperson and a faction of the board members.
That faction, the faction that existed, which I think other former board members have described to us, do you think the... And I know the role that the chair played in creating that faction. Do you think the minister had any role in widening those divisions between board members and creating that faction?
I think by virtue of supporting recommendations of a certain faction, it did give that faction more authority to continue behaving in a certain manner.
Right. Thank you, Ms. Kalidas.
Honourable Olivia. Thanks, Ma'am Pandap.
Thanks, Chair. Ms. Kalidas, when Ms. Mukhobo was in front of us, she indicated that the board was highly divided with infighting. Can you share more on what she shared with us?
Thank you, Honourable Olivia. You know, I think in terms of this infighting and the factions, it was on the basis of different values and principles. You have the one group which would want governance to be followed, which would take very cautious decisions, ensuring that there is process and procedure followed, as well as wanting to understand the consequences of decisions made. Then there was another faction which, you know, wanted things done in a very abrupt manner, you know, in a manner that did not take into account these policies. So I think the factions was on the basis of different interpretations of our fiduciary responsibilities.
On page 7, you have contradicting statements and actions, not necessarily from you. If we look at your statement, look at B there, I think it's 3B, where powers to appoint and to discipline staff and members are delegated to CEO, CEO, and COO. You go down to 5, on your unlawful removal, the minister is now writing to you. Because my understanding is that if they are given powers to appoint, they should be having powers to also dismiss. What was happening there, and as you are responding to me, couple that with when I asked the minister about your departure or removal from the board, she said there were allegations of fraud against you. Can you clarify us?
Thank you. I think the first quotation that's mentioned is in relation to the appointment and the removal of the 3 executive directors. And then under Section 5, the extract is in relation to the non-executive directors. In terms of the allegations that were made against me, I would like, you know, to honestly say before this ad hoc committee that to be able to motivate for our unlawful removal, there were fabrications that were made, and as my board member Krishnadu said, frivolous allegations. At a board meeting, the chairperson at the time, Prof. Maguve, indicated that the meeting would end at 1 o'clock. I therefore made arrangements to leave the meeting at 1:30, allowing for a bit of delays. And that was then taken that I left the meeting early. We are non-executive directors. We are only prepared to be there for the time that is given and allocated to us. So I think this was completely unfounded, and it was just a manner and a means used to justify an unlawful removal.
There's also an indication that most of the time board meetings failed to correct. But despite that, there were proposals that were taken which were endorsed in later meetings. What became of the decisions that were taken in meetings that failed to correct?
Thank you. I think the reason for the failure of meetings to correct was the haphazard manner in which they were called for at very short notice, given that board members are non-executive. They would sometimes not be available at such abrupt short notice, and that eventually resulted in the lack of the quorum. When there was a failure to correct, those board meetings do not actually have a legal standing. But unfortunately, the way the situation at the SABC took place was that they would proceed. Even though a board meeting did not correct or a subcommittee, they would proceed to meet, they would proceed to take a resolution. For example, in terms of our unlawful removal, it was a resolution taken by two members of a governance and risk committee, which was an incorrect subcommittee meeting. They then would make a recommendation to the board or to later committees that it must be in, that it should be ratified, and that's completely poor governance practice.
We sought the legal opinion from Parliament, which confirmed the unlawfulness of your removal, as you are indicating on page 9, because there you are expressing your disappointment at the portfolio committee. Also, what were you expecting the committee to do? Just tie that up.
Thank you. My understanding was that that legal opinion that was sought was initiated by the then Portfolio Committee of Communications. Because there was public comments made and because the portfolio committees are open to public, I was able to pick that up, and I requested a copy of that legal opinion from the company secretariat that I was provided with. My understanding was that because we are appointed to, through a public process that is vested with the Portfolio Committee of Communications, when our unlawful removal was initiated, my first point of call was to bring that to the attention of the then chairperson of the PCC. And one would expect that then the Portfolio Committee of Communications would have taken that matter to heart and ensured that due processes are followed. Given that there was a legal opinion from Parliament which advised that it was unlawful, we were quite disappointed that it actually fell off the radar of the PCC, and they basically ignored that legal opinion.
Thank you very much. Honourable Khoza.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, you know, I think I need to make this comment. I have a strong feeling that the minister misled us yesterday. I also feel that she probably misrepresented a lot of facts before us. And I think as this committee, we will have to take action when the time comes. Anyway, I thought I would put that in context. Ma'am, let's go to the meeting of the 2nd of July. The meeting of the 2nd of July and the, I think the 7th of July. Can you see those meetings?
Yes.
In your view, those meetings, the first meeting, that's where the minister is dealing with two specific issues. The first meeting, she's dealing with the public protector, the report, and she's dealing with the COO. And we see the minister again, and she pronounces herself to the point where she is covertly setting aside the public protector remedial auction. Then on the 7th, the minister Also, covertly stands outside the meeting, but obviously she has a predetermined outcome of what should transpire between those two items, which are related. Remember the findings of the public protector, and then you have the COO. You have the issue of the COO, the confirmation of the COO. That COO, who is implicated in that report? Now, would you confirm with me that the minister exerted influence or alternatively steered the board to take a particular decision consistent with her predetermined outcomes?
Thank you, Honourable Khoza. I think the extracts of the minutes and the resolution speaks for itself in terms of what the minister had pronounced on that day, in terms of her expectation to have the appointment made.
Okay, there is something else I also need to confirm, ma'am. There appears to be, first of all, before I go there, would you kindly forward that bundle of minutes that you have? Because to me, it appears as though the minister, Mr. Matsoneng, the company secretary, and Ms. Ellen Cook, Chabalala, appear to be colluding. And somehow it appears like that, because that the kinds of records that you are bringing forward to us and those that we were given that emanate from the company secretary, they're not the same. And I think we have to take action on that. Are you going to provide those minutes to us?
Absolutely. You know,
please, we need that. And again, do you think there is a relationship amongst these four in particular?
In terms of the manner in which they conducted themselves, you know, at board meetings, they were definitely of the same mind.
Okay. The other thing is that the minister told us that the multi-choice contract predates herself, so she wouldn't have known much about it or whatever that she implied. Now, it appears as though you came in 2013 and the minister came around the same time. Now, it appears as though there was that document that was prepared by Krish Naidu. Do you think the minister didn't know anything about some of the legal challenges that were being raised by board members in respect of the multi-choice contract? Because to us, she pleaded as if she didn't know that it was just a matter that was belonging to the board or whatever, and it predates her.
You know, I think that the multi-choice agreement also predates us as the board, but it was in the public arena. There was extensive coverage of the concern. So I think anybody who has the interest of the SABC at heart would want to do some research and obtain that information to have a better understanding of the consequences for the organization. She may not specifically know of the extracts of board minutes, but my understanding was that board member Krish Naidu did have a one-on-one session with her, which I hope he would have raised that specific issue.
Okay, finally, I just wanted to know, the acting group CEO once worked for Kabiso.
Very briefly, ma'am, your time.
Subsequently, we heard from Mr. Shushu. I thought maybe you can comment whether you know anything. Mr. Shushu here presented something to the effect that there was an irregular contract awarded to Sekela Kabiso. Now, I wanted to know if you know anything about it. If you don't, it's fine. We will follow other routes to investigate it.
No, I'm not aware of it.
Okay, sure. Thank you.
Thank you very much, ma'am. Honourable Swart.
Thank you, Chairperson. Ms. Cleese, would you sit forward a little bit, because I'm struggling to hear you. And I just want to say from the outset that I share my colleagues' concerns about some of the things the Minister indicated to us yesterday. And it's definitely something that, had we had of your testimony, we could have put to her, because there seems to be some conflicts. And I think that particularly with the appointment of the COO, I think she played a much greater role in that meeting of the 7th of July than she indicated to us. But I want to sketch a pattern And that is that the first time you met with the minister, the 2nd and the 7th of July, by the end of that year, most of the board had, those that were in one camp seemed to have been pressurized either to resign or to, there was frivolous charges against them. And I must say, I'm incredibly impressed by your ability, by your skills, by your qualifications. You are a chartered accountant. To have charges against your fraud is totally unacceptable. What did you further do about that? And would you agree with me that it seems to be an agenda to get rid of those board members that voted against the permanent appointment of the CEO and will seem to be part of a certain faction?
Thank you, Honourable Swart. I think I must also mention that at the board meeting of the 2nd of July, the minister did announce that she felt that the board was too big, that she would have liked to have a smaller board. So later on, after the CEO appointment process, board members who did not support the CEO all received letters requesting us to resign, as has been announced. And that process started in September. So I think if one looks at the time frames, very soon after that situation, there was already wheels in motion to want to see us out.
So within 6 months of that, you were all basically out. And and it seems that we've had incredibly skilled persons come in as witnesses from the board level, from senior executives. And if you were not toeing the line, there was a way was found to get rid of you. And this is why it's so important for us to get to the root of these issues. We had the changing of the memorandum to facilitate that. And it all seems to be around the certain grouping that you indicated earlier that seemed to be working with a specific agenda to pursue certain issues as per a faction. And you'd agree with that?
Yes.
Just can you tell me where you also indicated that there's a process that you are continuing with, the application by the SOS Support Public. What is that process?
Following our unlawful removal, I think there's been an outcry by the civic organizations. There was an application brought about by the SOS Support Public Broadcasting Coalition, the Freedom of Expression Institute, and the trustees for the time being of the Media Monitoring Project Benefit Trust, case number 76343/15, whereby they are challenging our unlawful removal. So I'm in support.
So where is that process now? Is it before court or where is that now?
Yes, it's before court. I'm not sure if the date has been set for that, but it is in motion.
Okay. And so we also saw the procurement processes. We saw a lot of irregularities that has been trying to explain away. To a certain degree, the minister said, well, it's not my responsibility. We had the chairman of the board saying he wasn't aware of a lot of the issues, which is totally unacceptable. It seems to be a total breach and collapse of governance. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely.
And would you agree that there's a substantial intervention from the parliamentary process is required, and that we, in fact, to a certain degree, the Communications Portfolio Committee failed in its responsibility as well?
Yes, I mean, our disappointment in terms of our unlawful removal, I think that if the PCC had pronounced at that point in time, we would have prevented certain of these issues that we are sitting with now. I think because they were allowed to get away with it, there was then a renewed sense of confidence that they could continue to bulldoze these matters through.
Last question, and that is there any doubt in your mind that Parliament appoints board members and it is Parliament working with the President that should remove board members?
Absolutely not. I think the matter of having only one board member is testament to that it's only Parliament that can appoint.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Sir Honourable Mahlangu.
Chair, thank you. Madam, just one quick question that before I get into the rest. Amongst the entities that you have been serving, you mentioned a lot of public entities. Have you ever served on private companies, especially ones that are listed at the stock exchange?
No, my interest has been predominantly public sector.
Okay. Now, your board members, I mean your CEOs, from what we pick up from the records, On average, your CEO would serve for only 6 months, am I correct?
That would be correct.
Because if you were serving, if you once served in the listed company, that would be, I mean, like red flashes,
yes.
Red lights for a company that treats its officials in that way. The next question I would like to raise, Chairperson, is that yesterday when the minister gave us evidence, she actually said that against her advice, the board appointed Mr. Mutsweni. In other words, she had advised you not to consider Mr. Mutsweni, and you, as the board, you actually said no. You wanted that person.
I'm very surprised to hear that. I'm hearing that for the first time. You know, given the extracts of the board meeting of 2nd and 7th of July, that is definitely not what you see written here. And I think the fact that the board met on the...
Just come closer to your mic.
Sorry, the fact that the board met on the 7th of July, and then on the 8th of July, you received a letter from the minister very early the next morning confirming the appointment. You know, I'm not sure where that advice would have taken place.
So as HR board member, you never processed advertisement or a recruitment process that emanated from administration coming to you?
Not at all. This did not pass through the normal recruitment processes.
And the rest of the other executives, they also just come in like that for appointment?
The CFO, which is also a group executive, went through the process of advertisement. So there was definitely inconsistency there.
And the CEO?
The CEOs, at the time, there was a process that was initiated to make a permanent appointment via the processes that were established.
So this could only be the only one that just came straight to the board?
Yes, where processes were circumvented.
And then competency tests.
Mm-hmm.
Is it something that is done at SAPC or not?
Under normal processes through your HR, that would be done, but this was not done in these particular incidents.
Now, the multi-choice deal, well, I actually call it SALE, and I know that I've been queried for using the name SALE. I'll revert to the one deal, although what I actually mean is that from my understanding, multi-choice was actually, the archive was actually removed from the public access only for benefit to private through this deal. What is your view? What is your view about this whole deal? What does it achieve or not achieve?
I think in my own personal opinion and based off on the opinion, the legal advice provided by our board member Krish Naidu, you know, definitely there is undue benefit towards multi-choice of what would normally vest within the public arena. I would think that, as has been alluded to, the sale of the archives, I think that's what it tantamountly advises to.
Yeah, okay. So at least we agree on that
yes.
one. And the amount of 23 million or 233 million, I don't know which of the two is correct, to be paid to, or actually already half of it or some of it having been paid to Mutsweni as a fee for facilitating the deal. Was that approved by the board?
No, not during my time. I only read about it now through the media. So I think it was this past recent months when it was done.
Okay. And as I conclude, Chair, I think I'd like to join my colleagues who holds a view that the minutes that we have been tampered with.
Mm.
And therefore, for those who under oath have confirmed that these minutes are indeed as they were, it's a matter that I think we will have to look at very seriously.
No, but there's an uncertainty. You see, the minister indicated, with fairness to the minister, that she did not support the appointment of the CEO recently. It's not back in 2 July. It was in October 2016. So
no.
On page 16 of her notes, Chair, just as a matter of clarity.
No, I wanted to raise that in fairness, that it's not we must not create the impression that the minister was in total support all along. At some point when there was a court ruling, she went to them and said to them, implement the court ruling. So that is clarified, that she might have supported at a certain point or leaned towards support in the sense of long serving, But after a ruling, I think, of the Supreme Court, she then said, implement the Supreme Court ruling. So you don't have to respond to that one. I just thought I'd raise it so that even when we deliberate, we can further sharpen it. All right. Honorable Mokoena, you've got 5 minutes.
Thanks, Chair. I would also add maybe that we should perhaps try and get the same minutes from other board members so that we can establish consistency. Are you well, ma'am?
Very well.
I'm just trying to check. In the meeting in which Claudia Motsweneng was appointed as permanent COO, was he present in the meeting?
He was there at the beginning of the meeting, and then at a certain point in time, he was asked to leave, so he recused himself when the discussion of his appointment took place.
How many people then were in the meeting, would have voted in the meeting?
At the point of voting, there were 11 non-executive board members present. The executive directors were also asked to recuse themselves, and they later joined the meeting. But they did vote subsequently.
So the people who voted were how many in total?
I would say 13.
13, okay. I'm also surprised. You say that the minister in that meeting said that she needed to appoint permanently a COO as per the recommendation of the public protector's report. I'm interested in that because yesterday she seemed to say that there was ambiguity as to the binding nature of the report. But you seem to be saying to us that in that meeting she was confirming the binding nature of the report.
I think I can provide the minutes to you. The minutes, you know, speaks for itself, whereby at the 2nd of July, she pronounced on the fact that the board needed to implement the public protector's report and the recommendations. And then on the 7th of July, the comments that were made were in relation to the Mkunu report.
Okay. No, because she came yesterday, she specifically said to us that there was ambiguity, as she wasn't sure as to whether, you know, the report was binding or not. And then were you aware of any other board members who communicated to the minister, either in private meetings or that communicated to you that they have communicated to the minister as to the chaos that Claudia Motsweneng was causing at the SABC?
Yes, when we all had our one-on-one meetings scheduled with the minister, I think later on, the board members who did attend, namely board member Bongani Khumalo, did share with us that he did have the opportunity to advise the minister of concerns. Later on, Hope Zinde as well made some comments.
So, in your view, the minister was aware of the chaos, and that chaos had been communicated to her specifically by board members?
Yes.
When at the meeting at which Claudia was appointed, according to the minutes, it was communicated to the minister as to the illegality of the appointment. Was it at the meeting itself?
At the meeting itself, when the minister joined us, the chair summarized the proceedings, and she summarized that there were a number of board members who did not support the motion of the appointment. But the chair did not go into the details of why we did not support it, and it was 11 p.m., so people were in a hurry to leave, and the minister advised that she would then act upon a written notification that is received from the board. But that was not done by the board. It was done by the chair. It seems like an isolation.
But she would have received the minutes as part of her investigation and
notification. She should have received it if due process was followed.
Yeah, and the minutes would have said that these are the reasons why.
But there was also the public protector's report, which had concerns that was a public document.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you very much, ma'am.
Pleasure.
Thank you very much. I almost forgot you. Nkonka, I beg your pardon. You're 5 minutes up now.
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. You almost forgot about me, right? And Chair, I think as the United Democratic Movement, we also wish to say that you need to do everything in your power to deal with people who came here and misled Parliament. Asizukwazi abantu baza apa bafike basiqokisele and then we keep quiet and do nothing about it as Parliament. I'm using uqokisele as a strong word in Xhosa to express our disgust and disappointment at some of the people who misled us here. Ma'am, I think because we are concluding this process, it's important for us to connect the dots for the people of South Africa about what happened.
Yes.
Now, I'm going to try to sketch the sequence or the chain of events. From where I am sitting, you'll correct me if I'm wrong, it seems that the overall strategy was, firstly, it was to get rid of the public protector's report by using a report or recommendation from Mr. Metsoneng's lawyers, because that report served as a stumbling block to what they wanted to do, to put Mr. Metsoneng as a COO, right? And in the process of them doing that, now I'll ask you the question when I'm done. In the process of them doing that, they had to purge all the dissenting voices in the board, right? Which was a different faction according to them. Then later on, amend the memorandum of incorporation to give powers to the executive so that they can in turn return the favor, purge dissenting voices among the executive members of the SABC who wanted to adhere to principles of corporate governance. And then at a later stage, also decide then to amend DEF so that they could be able to do whatever they wanted with procurement, right? So it was a strategy in essence to loot the resources of SABC. It was, in essence, if you look at it. Because how do you explain immediately after all those amendments have been made, the regular expenditure shot up to about 673 million rand, which is almost a billion rand. Mm-hmm. And when you look at the comments of the Auditor General, they would say there are no supporting contracts, no procurement processes followed. So it's a clear strategy overall to loot the state resources, mm-hmm. SABC as an institution. Would you agree with that?
I would agree, Honourable Member. I think I must just correct you that the Mkhunu report was not Mr. Motsoneng's lawyers. It was lawyers brought to the organization or brought to the board by the appointment of the then chairperson, Mrs. Shabalala.
Fair enough. But remember, you may not be aware of this, but I think the public protector, in fact, I have it in front of me, that on the 14th of July, in that very same year, 2014, wrote to the minister, expressing a concern about the fact that they followed the recommendations of a lawyer, right,
yes.
And undermined the Chapter 9 institution and its report, citing that they should have followed that,
yes.
Right? So in light, given all these failures at SABC, I'm talking about corporate governance failures, and the contribution of the shareholder representative, would you not say that it is hard to think of someone who is less versed on the workings of the board and issues of corporate governance at SABC than the minister herself?
No, I think that, you know, if one is a shareholder of the organization and there's various engagements, all of this information would have been brought to light.
No, I'm saying,
yeah.
If you look at her contribution in the mayhem itself,
yes.
Would you not say that she's also to blame for those failures?
Yes, I think my colleague Krishnaidu, as quoted, says she came too close to the action.
Yes, because she has vested interest in the action, correct? Now, I was listening to Professor Kumalo,
mm.
who said when he spoke about the behavioral tendencies of Tlaudi Motsoneng, Mr. Tlaudi Motsoneng, he said, for instance, that he was very combative before with the previous minister during board meetings, but he became more emboldened and less combative in the current term. Would that be an indication that he was deriving political power, was comfortable with the political power and support that he was getting, maybe from the shareholder representative and
yeah.
other people in government?
Yeah, I think definitely I can agree that, you know, there was a change in behavior amongst him as well as amongst board members from the time of the former minister Karim to the current minister.
Sinipagrile, thank you, Chair.
I didn't understand that, sorry.
No,
that was not for you. That was not for you. It was for
Ma'am Kalidas.
No, let me clarify that, Chair. It was not intended for you, ma'am. It was my way of saying, as a politician, I think we've got them out. Not.
Ma'am Kalidas, thank you very much for availing yourself. As we've indicated to all members or witnesses that appeared before this committee, our task ends at the 28th of February 2017. So if there is something that you'd like to bring to our attention between now and the 28th, you're more than welcome to do it through the companies, through the committee secretary, and in the normal method in which we do work, we will raise it with the committee and it will become public. So if there is anything, share it with us. But what we do want specifically are those bundle of minutes that you've been referring to. If you don't mind, if you could leave them with us before you leave today. Thank you very much. And ma'am, if you, we'll get to you now. If you don't hear from us or see us between now and Christmas and between now and the 1st of January, we wish you happy holidays and we wish you a prosperous new year.
Thank you.
All right. You are free to go, ma'am. Honourable members, we've got one more agenda item, as we all agreed earlier on. As soon as, I don't know if you want a two-minute break, and then we'll just have a meeting in terms of the way forward and take it from there. 2 minute break, or are you... Yeah. 2 minutes?